Today's koan is from the Book of Serenity. It's case number 14. Attendant Huo asked Daishan, "Where have all the sages since antiquity gone?" Daishan said, "What? How's that?" Huo said, "The order was for a flying dragon horse, but a lame tortoise shows up." Daishan let it rest. The next day, when Daishan came out of the bath, Huo passed him some tea. Daishan patted Huo on the back. Huo said, "This old fellow has finally gotten a glimpse." And again, Daishan let the matter rest. So there are many things about today's koan that touched me personally, and I wanted to speak a little bit about them before handing the talk over. I have so much to say that I'm going to just only give you a little bit of it now so that I can give some time to David and James. But the reason I have so much to say is because I really love this man, Daishan, so much. Since I first encountered him in koan practice, when I began with my first teacher and all through the times of encountering him again and again, sometimes in the same koans over and over, something about him really speaks to me. And last night in Steve's talk, he talked about intimacy because, of course, that's been a theme for us, the theme of intimacy. And he said, "I'm not going to talk about the intimacy between people," but went on to give his beautiful talk about all the other ways that we can encounter intimacy in our hearts and in the world. But I want to talk a little bit about the intimacy between people. So one of the reasons I love Daishan is that he started out as a very angry person, a very self-righteous person, but a person who loved the way so much that he traveled very far to encounter it. He didn't know what he was doing. He thought he was going to show other people the truth, but of course, he got his heart opened. And those of you who know his story might remember that many people were involved in the opening of Daishan's heart. An old woman selling dim sum by the side of the road, his first teacher, Long Tan, who blew out the candle. All of these stories are long and involved. And his capacity to be upset, to be angry and self-righteous, transformed through the power of practice into a great energy, a great power for the way. He didn't get rid of it. And it's important to know that the practice of Zen is not about eliminating things we don't like about ourselves. I can't remember the phrase Steve used, but it was something like minor irritants. I don't know what it was, but mild distaste, right? Mild distaste that sometimes erupts into huge self-loathing. We don't have to get rid of anything because it transforms itself into something useful eventually. If Daishan hadn't been that self-righteous, arrogant young person, he wouldn't be the powerful teacher that he turned into. And there are many stories of him. He went to Guishan, another teacher, and acted out after his awakening. And Guishan saw him as a powerful exemplar of the way. And he was very famous for being this strong, dynamic teacher. He was famous for using his stick and beating people. The way Lin Chi would shout, he would beat people with his stick. And I have to say that when I walked into the Zendo and saw my staff, the ring staff that we bring down for the liturgy, I almost thought, I'm going to bring that with me. Maybe, no, but it's the 21st century, so we have insurance issues. But there is this tendency sometimes, words fail in teaching. And all that's possible is to shout or to hit. What we do instead is we try to find direct words that clear us up of our attachment to thinking that certain things should be a certain way. And to open to see that things are as they are, and it's our duty to bring our Dharma eye to everything that we dislike. It's so important. And that was Daishan's way, it forcefully. But then, like a few of us in this room, he got old. He got tired. I don't want to use the word purified, but he got, like the essence nature of Daishan became so straightforward and simple that later on we hear stories about him. The famous story about him being yelled at by the cook, and you know, that happens, and just bowing. Some stories say he didn't even bow. He just returned to his room when he was chastised. And here we find him almost at the end of his life. This little koan happens almost at the end of his life. Very, very clear in his Dharma now. And his attendant, his jisha, his jan, challenges him with a question that means a lot to this guy. And you can make a lot of interpretations. I'm not going to make them about their interaction. But the attendant asks him this question: where have all the sages since antiquity gone? Another way of asking this question is: where has everyone who's ever been alive, who's died, where are they now? What's happened? Where have they gone? And Daishan answers, what? How's that? I hope you can see the transformation in this person who used to shout and flounce around, and then when his eye was opened, clearly use his dynamic energy through words, through actions, through his stick, to say, what? How's that? And then his attendant appears to insult him. I ordered a flying dragon horse, and now all I got was this lame tortoise. I mean, you know, we do get that kind of language sometimes. Who do you think you are? I wanted some great Zen master, and all I got was you guys. And again, Daishan let it rest. He let it rest. First he said, what? And then he let it rest. No response necessary. And then later on, this beautiful moment when he comes out of his bath and his attendant gives him a cup of tea. And in response, in some translations, he touches the shoulder of his attendant. Or sometimes it says he gives him a gentle pat. And the attendant says, oh, finally, in some translations, finally he's recognized me, or finally he understands. And again, Daishan let the matter rest. So Daishan is an example to all of us of how the power of this practice doesn't exclude anything. We can be consistently present with all of the things that we don't like about ourselves, about the world, about the way things are. Our hearts can break. We can find ourselves in deep, deep places of darkness. And it's important to trust in those moments that if we can be completely intimate with these things, intimate with our anger and our despair, intimate with the anger and despair of others, intimate with the anger and despair of this whole burning world, then something transforms. And like Daishan, we can bow, we can lightly pat, we can stay in connection. No matter what's happening, This is certainly what I aspire to, the transformation of all of the terrible things into terrible things that are useful for the way.
So just a few corrections. One of the wonderful things about these talks and the Dharma dialogues is that when any of us come forward with our heart, like Melissa does so beautifully, we all see the truth of it. We all resonate with the truth in ourself. And I think of Uchiyama's lovely saying that everything you encounter is yourself. So we sit here and listen to Melissa, and the Melissa we hear is not the Melissa outside of us, but the Melissa of our heart, the part of us that knows this truth, the part that approaches the world with a joyous curiosity. And so too with Daishan. And with all of these ancient worthies, that these are parts of us. And again, judgments arise, good part, bad part. But this encouragement to say yes to all the parts, incredible action of this teacher of Daishan, let it rest. I think this is the challenge for all of us. We all have dramas that we call ourselves. I call my drama David. Aaron calls his Aaron. Celia calls hers Celia. We're quite personal and familiar with this drama that we have created. This drama that is not something to be eliminated. The lovely reading this morning in the sutra service, that delusion is not something in our minds that we need to replace with something else. We're not searching for a better idea. Ultimately, Buddhism is a real problem because it's just another story. If you think Buddhism is true, you're in trouble. We're looking for something that is so large that it cannot be contained. And of course, this thing we're looking for every moment is presenting itself, every moment giving itself freely. And our work in sitting, our work in slowing down, our work in coming into stillness is to desist, to let it be. The hardest thing in the world to do and the easiest thing in the world to do. Those moments when we do stop our construction of self, when we create a little space for ourself, then there's no work to be done, nowhere to go, nothing to seek, just to let it rest.
Hey, what? What I love about this time in Sesshin is that we've kind of, for the most part, work through the hurt, physical hurts. For some of us, it's now just a persistent, dull ache with an occasional flare-up here and there. But we've got the posture down. We've quieted the mind just the tiniest, tiniest, tiniest bit, we're now open to the suggestions of the universe, the world as it comes to us. I know I sit here and these stories wash over me, and I sometimes recognize part of it, I sometimes don't. This one I really love. I love that picture of calling forth Pegasus and getting that poor lame tortoise. I think for all of us, this is an invitation to let go of the stories. Just for a moment. You don't have to worry. But in this time that we have together, these remaining hours and days, there is an invitation. And the young Daishan is great, but it's the old Daishan that opens the heart and shows us how to live. I would invite each of us to consider that little pat on the shoulder as we... each of us receive our tea, as we receive the word, as we receive the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Please make yourselves comfortable. And again, if you want to move, if you're over on the, behind the fireplace, make sure to take care of yourself and move over.
Hey, what?
Huh? Yes, Jeremy.
I was wondering if you could say a little more about not so much the meaning of letting it rest, but how one does that, because I am also very easy, ready to anger, and more arrogant than I usually want to admit. and I've gotten decent at this point in my life at not acting on that impulse of anger, but I don't really know what to do with it, so I end up simmering, and the tendency is still for the pot to boil over at some point. And so I don't, letting it rest isn't, it's not an external thing, it's an internal thing, and I just don't get it yet. Anything you could say would be very helpful.
I would say just wait 40 years.
Which brings me to my second question. Patience.
You point to the wonderful thing that we hear these words and the little self thinks, okay, let me do that. We cannot do this. Right? All of us here, we know what we're supposed to do. Right? And then we notice sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. Right? Occasionally it flares up and it just flares up. And then there are other times it flares up and I put some more logs on and we run around. What am I going to do about the fire? Let me put some more logs on. Maybe that'll help. And I think of Hongzhi in that lovely reading. He talks about you must purify, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. So this quality of wearing down, and the reason I say wait 30 years, that I think...
It's getting quicker.
I know.
I can't remember how many years.
What?
Is that there is a timing to the Dharma, and it's not clearly not my time, clearly not your time, but that if we keep going and boil over again and again, and we make our apologies, we repent, and then we vow to let it be, and then we meddle, and then we repent, that over time, and I think this is what we see in Daishan. It wasn't one moment. He had this great enlightenment and still went around full of himself. But maybe we can trust that over time the world will do us. Because certainly we cannot do it ourselves, can we?
And letting it rest, or desisting, which is the word David brought in, which is one of in the other translations, doesn't mean to let it go, to get rid of it, to not be angry. There's a very short story from Deshan's life that I think might be appropriate here to get a taste of what he meant by how his non-reactivity transformed. This is when he was dying. And a monk asked him, "Is there someone who's not dying?" And he said, "Yes." And the monk said, "What about the one who's not dying?" And he said, "Oh." So this is it, right? This is not like, "Oh man, I'm beyond all that. I don't even know what a stick is anymore." It's not that. It's that he made some big, big container for the anger. He allowed it to be present. He allowed his dying to be present. He didn't just say, "Oh well." He said, So there's something about, I think Steve was really pointing to it last night too, this capacity we do develop on the cushion to bear ourselves. So if you can, you know, that's what you bring to the picture. You bring bearing your anger and bearing your impatience. Not transforming it, that's not your job. Like David just said, that's not it. It's not up to you. The Dharma will take care of that. But you know, and then when you can't bear it, to turn away from it and recognize that that's a thing we do too. You know, and it's a question of bearing it and then going, "I can't do it." Bearing it, "I can't do it."
I'd like to midrash on that a little bit as well. For me, this practice, the relentless looking, the relentless being present, whether we do it on the pillow and simply watching our internal stuff happening, or we engage it through somebody else's story, through the koans, what I found over the years is the field gets larger. And not, as Melissa was very much saying, none of this goes away. I'm not terribly angry person, but I desire, I want, you know. And yeah, so we all have our stuff, whatever our story is, you know, we're sticking with it. But the practice is in this not turning away, in this constantly being present to who we are, and maybe working on little tricks to do things, but and not turning away from the fact that they're little tricks, just causes the field to get larger and larger. And for me, Deshan's world is infinite. He turns from nothing. Pegasus can arrive, and that's wonderful. The lame tortoise can hobble onto the scene. That's wonderful. He's given a bowl of tea, and he simply pats that person. That's all there. And the older versions or the younger versions of Deshan, they're there, you know. His arrogance, his fire, his fierceness, his gentleness, his oneness with the pain of his dying. It's all in this giant, giant field that we're being invited into every day, that we plop ourselves, what was it? Our butts gloriously, happily, lovingly, joyfully.
Lay your
lovingly, lovingly. Lovingly lay your butt.
Butts on the pillow.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that drama that you call David and the drama that I call Bob and the drama that you call Jeremy, that is so helpful for me to be reminded of. And you spoke about it with me yesterday, and I was thinking about it when you talked, that anger comes up, that impatience comes up, and that sometimes when I can remember that it's not personal, that this is what the human heart-mind well, this is what arises. That it doesn't mean it goes away. It doesn't mean that I don't have to take responsibility for it, but it means that I can have more compassion for myself and for the other people who are really angry and really impatient. And that in those moments, I can loosen this kind of, this sort of bludgeoning that I do for being me.
Derek and then Jay.
I just want to say that my drama is self-pity. And it's absurd because, I mean, look at where I am, lived, and what I have. And it's amazing how I'll find the littlest thing to be sad to myself for. You know, just as he is.
Well, and I think that's the astonishing creativity. That all of us, you know, like James said, it's my story and I'm sticking to it. And that when we look like that, then there can be even some appreciation for this selfing. That I think it's really important that this is not an evil thing we're trying to eradicate. This is the most precious opportunity. Your self-pity, you know, my loneliness, what, you know, whatever. What a wonderful thing. How filled with life and possibility, the anger. Because that is the entry point. You know, if we were who we imagined we should be, we'd be really in trouble. But lovely to name how it doesn't take much to maintain our story. And we can really see that on retreat, yeah. Right? How you can run your story. You can find, you know, enlist people for the characters. You play this one, you play this one. You don't need to know any information. They don't even have to know they're part of the drama.
It's better.
It's better.
It's better when they don't know.
It's better when they don't know. But before you, the thing that you just said, that I think this is really, I want to keep underlining it. There's life in these stories, but they're trapped in the narrative traps the life. And you know, so to really know them thoroughly, and then to feel the energetic quality of them, whatever it is, you know, maybe it's that everybody hates you. That's my story.
And she can maintain that.
I can maintain it, and I can take the tiniest little bit of evidence. It's just like, yeah, doesn't matter. And it's really great. It's a shame. but there's life in that, right? It's really alive. And if we try to be good and damp it all down, that you know, it just... instead of this welcoming, this is what we talk about, the practice of welcoming. Yeah, so welcoming self-pity, welcoming paranoia, whatever it is.
So Jay and then Julie.
I was just reminded in the conversation we began early on in the session with Vimalakirti saying, I'm sick because the world is sick.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And I'm angry because the world is angry.
Yes.
I'm lonely because the world is lonely.
Yeah, lovely turning of that phrase. Right.
That's it.
It's all here. The world is here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
The idea of our personal dramas brought to mind a phrase from, I can't remember what book it is. I did a talk on it with me, so I couldn't remember. But all of the drama and the plots and the developments and the trajectories we get caught up in being the scenery of our life. Because usually I think of the people around me, the floor, everything else. That's the scenery, and this is my life, is the plot. What about flipping that around? What if that's the scenery?
Yeah. Right, it creates that little bit of space to be able to be there without taking it quite so personally. Oh, this is the scenery, anger scenery.
And then it makes everybody around you and the floorboards and the light be in a different spot.
Right.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I'd like to do a shout out in favor of the what eh response.
Yes.
I'm thinking of a
speak up. Oh, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. What? I'm speaking out in favor of the what eh response. Because I'm thinking of a particular time when I went to a teacher one teacher, and although it could be any of them, probably has been at one time or another. And there were certain aspects, it was very dark for me, and there were certain aspects of it that I could see, but there was a particular objection that I had to the whole thing, like, I just don't like it. And the teacher could have given me a response or an answer, but instead sent me back to just have a look at it, just sit with this for a bit. And very quickly, just by, I don't know, maybe being given permission to just, that it's okay to just have a look at that and see what's going on, it became apparent what was going on. And if I had been told, I would have lost that gift. It wouldn't be the same at all. But the opportunity to stew with it on my own was the real gift. I don't know that I would have been such a skillful teacher. So, much appreciation.
Faye, and then.
I really liked this as an intimacy between people, and just sort of like reminding myself, maybe not in these exact words, but of a time when I was like, you know, to someone, oh, you're not what I want you to be, and in return got something back like, you're exactly what I want you to be. And just to be like, wow, like, there's actually nothing wrong with you. That's just what I needed, you know, and always just trying to self-satisfy, like, the student to, you know.
Yeah.
Deshaun.
Yeah. But thanks for, you know, that was a point that maybe it got buried, but you really heard it. The Deshaun really was helped by these people he encountered along the way, that he was never alone in this. You know, that's I think that's part of our way, that we keep encountering each other. Somebody can give you, that's a turning word that person gave you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very surprising, and does the switch, like Julie's switch. It, everything is revealed when we turn things around. So I really appreciate what you just said.
Speak to getting old. And this story really touched me because I think it's something about not only years of practice and growing wisdom, but it's also being really tired. You can't see too well, you can't hear very well, you don't remember anything anymore. And all those things, I think, facilitate letting you go. I think there's this extra aspect of when one practices, you receive all of that, you know, your lack of capacities with maybe a little more grace. You know, and that, you know, instead of going for Botox and, you know, whatever, which I see a lot of people my age doing, it's some receiving, which we've all been trained to do. This is how it is now. Oh, this is losing your capacities. Oh, this is getting tired. This is not being able to hear everything going on. You know, and oh, okie dokie, you know, here it is. And so that's what I was recognizing. Story, and isn't
it wonderful that we all have to look forward to that? And that this practice lets us do it, hopefully more gracefully. Well, and I think you point to this possibility of human life, of a life of increasing freedom that's not contingent on being young, doing push-ups, you know, whatever it is, and it's such a such a radical idea that maybe this whole getting old thing is not a mistake on the part of the universe.
It's also some aspect of compassion. When you know, I remember being young and really think you have to do everything, or potentially couldn't know everything, do everything, and then you get to the point of, really, I can't. Mm-hmm. And a growing compassion for others who can't. You know, instead of looking at mistakes or we fucked up, well, you know, just like, you know, like that aspect, and the tap, the light tap.
Yeah. Thank you.
Me.
I was thinking of the Shunryu Suzuki quote where he says, "We practice so we can appreciate our old age," which I think is really sweet. Maybe a little later than some of us might like, but anyway. I also love the part in The Princess Bride where she says, "I'm going to kill myself in the morning," and he looks at her, the old guy looks at her and says, "Won't that be nice?"
Yeah, that'd be nice. You suggest that I want to turn around the old age thing a little bit, because a lot of the commentaries on this koan talk about, you know, the old age, and there's all this appearance of decline in Daishan. But really, if you flip it over, he's just more clear, and he doesn't have to do as much. And I think that's the alignment with, we don't have to, we think we have to do all this stuff, and really, we're being done. And he's reached this point where, you know, it fools people. And when he shuffles off, you know, when he's reprimanded by the cook in that other story, it fools people. So Zhui Feng in that other story takes the confusion. He says, "Whoa, our old boss has lost it. He doesn't even know the final word." But he's crystal clear. And so it's our job to get refined to that point where we can match the refinement of Daishan. Really see, right? You know, really see that what that guy did in The Princess Bride is exactly to the point. Cuts right through that woman saying, "I'm going to kill myself." And that'll be nice for you, or whatever he said. That's a deep wisdom. And I think, you know, age does bring wisdom. I'm sorry to disappoint young people in the room, but I really believe it does. Because of what Jeannie's pointing to, things drop away. You see what's important, and you don't have to make such a fuss.
And I put an "and" in there.
Yes.
I'm quite fond of, I think it was at Jan's mother's house some years ago when I first saw the one of those breadboards with the especially fond, apparently in German households, of various bits of wisdom. And this one said, "Too soon, old, too late, smart." And what I love about Zen is that it allows you to get old before your time.
Yes, exactly.
So you don't have to wait till you're...
Yeah, it's not going to take 40 years for you.
Yeah, you can do it.
Can I just do another motto? That's what I thought you were going to say. Growing old is mandatory, growing up is optional.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Right.
I guess I want to say I really appreciate the other story that you shared about when he was dying. Mm-hmm. Hearing that he wasn't beyond, you know, the pain of dying, of what he was feeling right in that moment. Two things went through my mind. One was the story about the person that sat like kalpas and kalpas, and the question was, how come he didn't attain Buddhahood? And the teacher says, because he's an unattained Buddha, you know? And so I guess what came to me was no guarantees in this life. You know, we practice as much and as long as we can, and we don't know what the result will be. And when the teacher went, you know, for dying, it's like, yeah, I may still die with my drama, mm-hmm. my story. You know, just because I sit for the rest of my life doesn't mean I'm going to get past that. Right. Like you said, you know, and it's not something to get rid of either. And also not something to hold on, hopefully not something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. And when people were talking about getting old, I thought, I don't know what's coming. It may be dementia. It may be, you know, I may lose my mind. I may, it's not just capacity of body, you know, that all of a sudden I can't walk very well, and or I can't, I have to sit down to put on my socks, you know, and I may lose I may not be able to think clearly. I may not be able to speak anymore. The mind may go. So that, I guess that story of him just being present with the pain of dying was just so helpful to me. That too.
Mm-hmm. And there is one thing that's guaranteed.
Dying? Yeah.
So, that moment when Deshaun passed the attendant is infinite, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think that's what's so beautiful about it, is that it's right here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that's the... As James was saying, the pat is the tea being served, the breeze of the fan, and so dangerous to talk about this maturing and this 20 years or...
Lisa shrinking.
We keep going, there's hope, right?
By the end of Sashim.
The days, yeah.
Right, days and nights go by like lightning. but so important that this is not a matter for the future.
Right.
This is not a matter of getting old or getting young or anything in that realm. This is something fully manifesting that's supporting each one of us. And not to wait for something else.
And you know this, what that he says, what, huh, is a quote. A timeless quote that comes from an old, old story that was, I guess, popular in Chinese tradition of some seven women who went to the charnel grounds, and somebody, one of them says, "Where have all the people gone?" Like, the, you know, there's ashes and dead bodies everywhere. "Where have all the people gone?" And one of the other women says, "What? What?" And they all wake up to this moment, like, boom, seven people in one moment. And that's a story that Deshaun would have known. And that actually points to, he was not a senile old codger. He was like, phew, right in the, and that pat had the same, it's that timeless. Everything's right here. Everything's right here. Don't be fooled. So, don't be fooled. I'll see you later.